The Dirty Dozen, Ireland's motorsport legends in conversation with John Kenny. This week, Billy Coleman.
Crowds wait to greet Billy Coleman in the Opel, winning his fourth international in 1984. He's now the STP Tarmac champion, and that's from a driver who just 12 months earlier was making a comeback into top-class rallying. Rightly, he would share the glory with a service crew headed by Sidney Meek and, of course, dealer Opel Team Ireland.
Billy Coleman remains the only Irish driver to win both the Irish and British Rally Championships. His fourth place finish on the Acropolis Rally is also the best finishing position for an Irish driver on a World Rally Championship round. He remains an Irish rallying icon. We met at his farm near Mill Street in County Cork, where he told me where he first got interested in the sport of rallying.
The family was in the motor trade in Mill Street, but it was when I was at university in Cork and just attending the Munster Motorcycle and Car Club evenings, film shows and what have you, that I got interested. And it was really one evening, Den O'Sullivan, who was at the college doing engineering at that time, and he said to me, to my amazement, that why wouldn't we enter a rally sometime? And I said, with what? And well, he said, you know, get something out of the garage. So the next week, I turned up with a Ford Anglia, threw off the hubcaps, and Dan and myself were suddenly rally driving. So that's really how it began. My father was probably suspicious of what was going on in the beginning, but in fairness, once we got going and, you know, it looked like that we might be good sometime at this job, he was very, very supportive. We moved on to a Cortina GT then, and that was big stuff that time. And the first thing I remember you had to do, you had to get an upgraded second gear. The first rally that Dan and myself won, as far as I remember now, it was 1968, and it was the Circle of Munster Rally.
It seems strange that you'd say that you're a reluctant driver, considering the amount of success that you had over the years, Irish rally champion, British rally champion as well. I mean, reluctant seems perhaps the wrong word.
I wouldn't say it is, actually, because my interests were always split between my life on the land and the rally driving, whereas I think really to get to the very top in any sport, even at that time, you know, talking back 25, 30 years, you had to be totally dedicated. I mean, when you look at somebody like Roy Keane or even Christy Ring, you know, there wasn't a day but he would practice hurling and try and hone his skills and really to the very ultimate. And unfortunately, I was never quite of that mindset, and I think it was much to the detriment of my career ultimately.
But outside of the fact that you were a reluctant driver and your love of the land, as you say, which has, you know, obviously started back then and continued to this present day, the one car that started you off really was that Mark II Escort, that TIU 250. And there's some great shots of that car with, it looks like two pieces of elastic holding the front part of the bonnet together. It just seemed to be the car that was right for you to kick the whole start of your career.
You're right, absolutely right there, John. But the thing is, you see, at that time, the great thing about motorsport was that if you had a bit of money, you know, maybe you had to have a thousand or two, but you could actually do a great deal with it. Whereas nowadays, I mean, you've got to have, I mean, if you have serious intentions about trying to make a career out of it, you're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions. So really the Ford Escort, it was a cheap, it's a very simple car with a great engine, and it would go run forever, and it was absolutely ideal for a young driver. And if you crashed it or whatever, it was relatively easy and cheap to repair, and we did all those things. And as you said, the chicken mesh grill that you mentioned, that actually came about as a result of an accident, and there had to be a quick repair done for the following weekend, and it stayed in it and became a kind of a trademark.
It was 1969, you begged and pleaded with the organiser of the Circuit of Ireland to get in.
Yeah, well, that was an amazing weekend. And again, you know, one keeps making the contrast with the present day, but I think we started 120-something, rather, and we really had no idea what was happening up at the head of the field. And, you know, we were driving hard, but we assumed we were going probably not, you know, we weren't in any prominent position in the rally. And it was actually, believe it or not, until we got, the rally had started in Larne, I suppose, and we had driven all Friday evening, Friday night, and all of Saturday. And it was actually only coming into Killarney, when we got into Killarney on the Saturday evening, and somebody said they had seen a notice board which said that we were in third place overall. So we immediately assumed, Dan and I, that that it was had been a major mistake, and it was probably 103 or something we should be instead of three. So, but in fact, it turned out that that was our position, and I think in that rally, out of 50 or 60 stages, but I think we had 8 fastest times. So, to be fair, now the Ford Motor Company had begun to give us a bit of help during the rally. My late colleague and friend Roger Clark, of course, was leading the rally and went on to win it. But the rally manager for Ford of Britain at the time was Bill Barnett, and I got a letter from Bill Barnett following the rally, saying that he was coming to Ireland in the summer, and he'd like to talk to me, that he thought I had considerable potential as a driver. And so, unfortunately, I had planned, it was my final year in college, and I had planned, and actually had my ticket at that point, to go to the States for a year. I had wrote back to Bill Barnett, said, you know, that unfortunately I wasn't going to be there. So I often regretted maybe doing that, even though my year in America was something I'd always remember. And, it was really a special experience for me. But I would say I lost my first big chance in the rally world by foregoing the meeting with Bill Barnett. And when I came back from the States a year later, I had to sort of re-establish myself, which took quite a long time. And it was really 1974 before I kind of got back into consistently good results, and that was the year that we won the British Rally Championship.
The Circuit of Ireland itself is no longer the full circumference of Ireland, 1,500 miles as it used to be, and there was no pace notes at either of those days. Basically, your navigator was sitting beside you with no pace notes going through the 55 odd stages. Tell us, how did that work?
It was an absolutely tremendous challenge, and you know, if you looked at it on paper before the event, you'd wonder how you would ever get around the whole circuit. And I think it was for that reason that it attracted, you know, a lot of the world's top drivers over the years. You had to be able to drive in the dark. It was probably a particular strength of mine. I've never knew quite why, but I was often more competitive in the night stages. Maybe it's something to do with eyesight or something. But you had to be able to deal with, you know, fog. And then there were even years when we had snow on the Circuit of Ireland Rally at the end of March, early April. So, it was a tremendous test, and sadly it's not there anymore, but I think it's a great loss to motorsport that it isn't.
1974, UK for the first time, and actually went on to win the British Championship. Some great battles that year, and the Burma Rally, you lost to Clark by, I think it was 1 second?
Yeah, that was an amazing night. The Burma Rally was Argyllshire in Scotland, and the conditions were very bad. There had been heavy rain. It was, even though it was the month of August, it had rained heavily. And amazingly, we found ourselves in the lead. And it was actually a rally we should have won, because unfortunately, in the longest stage, in the middle of the rally, the bonnet opened in our car for some reason. And we had to stop, actually get out and refix it and get back in. And the result that, I don't know, we lost probably 15 seconds or more. I was called to a meeting with Stuart Turner on the Monday morning after that, and Roger had been their main driver for a long time, but he thought it was time for a younger driver to maybe hit the scene. And he was impressed with the drive in Scotland and the fact that we were leading the championship. And really, he wanted to look at the following year. But to be fair, it was not a good time to be Irish in England, because sadly the troubles in the north were in full spate, and it was really difficult time. But to their credit, they were absolutely fair with us, you know. But it was not the ideal time for a rising young Irish sportsman. And I got works drives after that with Fords, but I wonder if it had been 10 years later, it might have been different. It's the following year in 75, where again we were leading. I think at one point we had quite a massive lead, because I think I'd won the first 3 rounds. It got to a point around September where, again, my great rival and friend Roger Clark, and teammate indeed, suddenly began snapping at our heels. And I think the only way that we could have improved our position in the championship from there on in, I think there were maybe 2 or 3 rounds left, was to actually beat Roger on the individual rounds. And the second last round was a rally called the Lindisfarne, which was held in Keilor Forest. You know, to keep our lead, with 1 round to go after that, we had to beat Roger. So you know, this reflected something in my career, which I think very often I didn't take people's advice. Looking back, and there was one thing, including my father and several people, used to say to me that I wasn't hard enough on the car, in particular when in revving the engine. And I mean, the Ford engine, the Cosworth engine that was in those Ford Escorts, was a phenomenal unit, and you could really rev the daylights out of it. But I had a habit of changing up, but just when you went past, you know, peak powers, which was around 8,000 revs. And here was a chance anyway, and I said I'd put the theory to the test and see if the extra revs would do anything. And my goodness, what a difference it made. If I'd only done it a bit, you know, a bit sooner in the year and the year before, I'd say would have probably won a lot more in that Escort.
Roger finished fourth, and that was enough to give Roger the crown. The RAC Rally, one of the many years that you actually competed on that particular event.
Yeah, the RAC Rally, I did several of them, and it was the most grueling event held in the forests of Britain, middle of Scotland, and took in Wales and even the southwest of England. There was some jinx on me in that event. For practically every year, something really strange happened, and it was a world rally, and I actually had an outside chance of winning it on more than one occasion, if everything went right, but we seemed to be jinxed for some reason. And in fact, the 1975, I think it was, and it was Roger Clark and the great Timo Mäkinen that were hammer and tongs for the lead, and Dan O'Sullivan and myself were some distance behind, but not that far. We were dicing with Stig Blomqvist for third place, and I remember the late Henry Lydon, who actually I'd done a couple of rallies with. He was Timo's co-driver, and he said to me up in Carlisle at a service before we went into Scotland, and he said, young man, he said, if you play your cards right here, you could end up winning this rally. Because he reckoned that at the pace that Clark and Mäkinen were going, that neither of them would probably finish. So the next stage after that was in southern Scotland, and the Escort suddenly stopped. And we were, I think, nearly 15 minutes apart on the side of the road. And all that had happened was, it was absolutely maddening to see what happened. It was just a small electrical connection under the bonnet had come apart, and so plugged that back in and we were away. But Roger finished just a few places higher, and it was enough to give him the championship.
Well, in 1976, it was sixth on the RAC Rally, but you had a very good success at home that year. You won Galway for the first time in the Mark II. Won the circuit, beat Russell Brooks, top three in Donegal. Manx was third. You won the Cork 20 for the fourth time. Irish title as well. So, you know, the career is progressing very nicely, and the Mark II Escort as well is becoming synonymous with Billy Coleman. And lo and behold, in 1977, you get into this strange-looking left-wheel drive Lancia Stratos. Where did that come about? How was that deal done?
Done a fair stint in the Ford Escort, and maybe I just felt like a change, and an opportunity came up. Tony Pond had been driving the Stratos, and he had moved on to Vauxhalls or something, and the drive was there. So somehow or other I got in touch with David Richards. Cut a long story short, anyway, we did a deal with the Checkered Flag in London, the Checkered Flag Garage, to drive that car for the year. You know, it was interesting to say the least. The Stratos was a small Ferrari engine with a very good suspension layout, and theoretically it should have been the ultimate car, but in actual fact, for a lot of the events we were doing, I felt the wheelbase was a bit short, and I really had limited success with the car. And I think we won a single event over the year, and that was in Donegal actually with Austin Fraser. But, you know, I enjoyed driving it, and I think I came second on the Circuit of Ireland to Russell Brooks, driving with no clutch for probably half the rally. So I did feel I could have given Russell a good run for it, but for that.
You also dabbled in the European Championship. You were fourth in the Ypres Rally. Was it time to move on into something different than just the European Series presented that different challenge for you?
Yeah, I would say that was it, and that was 1979. We had quite a decent run, and, you know, took us all over Europe, really, as you mentioned, Spain and Italy, Poland even, Germany. We did a lot of events that year. You know, every round you went to, there was very strong, in the Italian rounds, the Italian works teams were there. And, you know, it was quite competitive, but it was a long series, and third overall wasn't too bad, really, for with a kind of a restricted budget.
But that seems to permeate throughout your career as well. A lot of the rallies you did on shoestrings, you got works drives as well, and you mentioned about the fact that obviously having a works drive meant you had backup. Were you looking at yourself at that stage and saying, where am I going with this? I mean, I've won the British Championship, I've won the Irish Championship, third in the European Championship. And I know in 1980, you did a couple of rallies, including the West Cork, which you won again, and did the Circuit of Ireland as well. But then, lo and behold, you backed out of it for a year and a half.
Yeah, well, in fact, through my farming, I fell into very bad health at that time, around 1980-81, and I actually couldn't drive at all, whether I wanted it or not. So I was out of it for 2 or 3 years, and I suppose I must have got itchy feet again. And Con Murphy, who was married to my first cousin, said to me we might enter the Rally of the Lakes. And another old friend of ours, Sidney Meek, gave us... I think it was actually a Bertie Fisher car, an Opel Ascona, and Con and I went down and surprisingly won the...
There's a great story about this one, isn't this? Is this the £10,000 to get the car over the border down to the Rally of the Lakes? What exactly happened there?
Well, you know, it was a typical, my career again, it was a last-minute job, and Sydney was crossing the border. Apparently a bond had to be paid on the car because it was a British registered car. It was a Friday evening, there was no banks open, so lo and behold, another friend of mine, Paddy O'Callaghan from Kenturk, you'd never guess he had a couple of bank drafts in his pocket. They had to be deposited in the port of Cork City with some customs agent, and at about 3 o'clock in the morning, the car was released from the border post at Carrigarnon. So, you know, there were a lot of those stories over the years, a lot of incidents like that. That really triggered the drive with in the Opel Manta with the dealer Opel Team Ireland.
That was the year that we first came across the strong-headedness, let's put it this way, of a five-time Irish Rally Champion, Austin McHale, and you were his teammate that year. I know Austin was the main instigator of getting that Opel deal together, and he perhaps felt that you were foisted upon him in that team, because I know that the Munster dealers were very anxious, obviously Opel Munster dealers were very anxious to get you on board that team. Did the relationship between yourself and Austin McHale become a little bit fractious because of it?
You're right, that is exactly how it came about, that some of the Southern dealers were keen, you know, to get me in a car that year. And I remember a meeting one day in the Opel office in Dublin. The late John Ritchie was the sales manager for Opel Ireland, and he wasn't too happy about the situation in Ireland, but a famous line of his that I often thought about, he said we had a budget for one car, and now suddenly he said, I have to find money for a second car, because it seems in Ireland, he said, they can't resist a winner. But, you know, I think in many ways it made it for a very interesting year. And in fact, the first round was in Galway. And I distinctly remember I didn't drive at all well. And then it came to the circuit. And the great Henry Tyvenin, who was a friend of mine, was leading by a mile in the Porsche. And he suddenly got into difficulties around the Waterford area on the Easter Monday. And I inherited the lead through driving just consistently, really, and making no mistakes. And as far as I remember then, what happened on the Monday, Austin was chipping away at my lead and eventually got ahead of us. And coming into Donegal the final morning, I can't remember how much, there was probably less than a minute between us. I said I'd better pull up my socks and give it one last go anyway. And I think maybe there were 8 or 10 stages along Donegal and along the north of Ireland there. So the next stage, then after the breakfast halt, I think we took back a good bit of time. And the very next one after that, Austin's engine blew. But in all fairness, I think he was unlucky not to win that rally, because I certainly, from a driving point of view, I didn't deserve to win it. But I sort of, it fell to me, really. And that was... And, you know, after that, then I remember I had a very good dice with our late colleague, Bertie Fisher, in Donegal, and with Austin, of course. And... it was really, that was where I kind of refound my groove in Donegal that year, and I began to drive well again. And I think we won most of the events the rest of the year.
You won Donegal, you won Killarney, you won your second Irish Tarmac Rally Championship. That was 84, but 85 then, a change again, and I suppose it's the one name that you became synonymous with, the Rothmans Porsche. It did bring you to fourth on the Rally of Corsica. It was the highest ever placing from an Irish driver on a World Rally Championship round.
Yeah, the Corsica was probably the second event I did in the car, and It was the most grueling event. Although strangely, it was held entirely in daylight over 3 days. But I mean, the roads in Corsica are just extraordinary. They're so twisty, and it's a very physically demanding event. It was really what I needed to get to know the car. And by the end of those 3 days, really, I felt really confident in the car. And you know, as you say, we came in fourth, just behind our teammate Bernard Beguin, the Frenchman.
And you then went from, I suppose, maybe sublime to ridiculous, from the Porsche 911 into the Metro 604. I mean, Metro 604s are still around these days, running in rallycross events. They are a Group B supercar and four-wheel drive monsters. I mean, how did you find driving this particular monster?
Well, the Metro was a fabulous little car. It was four-wheel drive. It was this small enough dimensions. It had a Cosworth 3-litre V6 engine, which was turning out, I don't know, 500 plus horsepower maybe, and it was the most exhilarating car. And considering that I had very limited experience in four-wheel drive, it took me about a day and a half to get confident with the car. The car was so good. In fact, I remember when we were in the Isle of Man that year, Rotmans brought along the great Nigel Mansell, who was world champion in Formula One at the time, and I had to give him a couple of spins up and down the road. And he was just amazed, you know, that the power and the way the whole car handled. But interestingly, when he got out of it, he said he wouldn't do it for any bloody money. But it was a terrific little car. And sadly, at the end of that year, the Group B was finished because they figured that we're getting too, you know, we're getting dangerous. And there had been a couple of serious accidents. They were really brought to an end at the end of that season.
And speaking of end, I mean, you didn't go to Killarney that year, so Austin McHale won the title after winning in Cork. And then next year, a BMW M3 won by ProDrive. It was a car that you had said in the past was very much in its developmental stage, so it wasn't that lucky a car, but it was basically 87, the end of 87, when you decided, that's it, you're 40 years of age and it's time to call it a day.
I was pushing on 40, and I really felt that Carmel, and we had the family, we had three children at that stage, and really I felt that I wanted to stay at home, and that was it. I called it a day.
You talk, you know, perhaps you should have pushed yourself a lot more, perhaps you should have taken people's advice. When actually people outside of a car look at what you've done, becoming British champion and Irish champion, the only driver ever to do it, to finish fourth in Corsica, to have the adoration basically of the Irish rallying public, do you sit back now and say, you know, it was a pretty damn good career?
You know, for a lot of those people who were actually following my career, I probably do regret that I didn't give a bit more. But I suppose you can only force yourself to do so much. And as I said earlier, really, I was at a certain level of commitment, and that was it. You know, I suppose I had a reasonable innings, but it could have been a lot better. There's no doubt about it. But that's the way it goes.
Would you like to have gone car racing? I know there was a talk that perhaps if you didn't do rallying, the car racing would have been something you'd have liked to have done. I know your son Robert is a former Ireland champion and had a stint in across in the UK. Would you like to have done something similar?
Well, at the beginning, strangely, it was what I was going to do, because at one point I had my bag packed to go over to Brands Hatch. At that time, that famous Mark 1 Escort turned up, and I went on that route then instead. But it was one of the biggest regrets I have, that I didn't do racing, because I'd say I was more cut out for it. You know, I was the right size, and a lot of the problem I had in rally cars was motivating myself, whereas the few races I've ever competed in, there was absolutely no problem. I was really going for the juggler every time. And having said that, the chances are that I would have, I'd say, seriously injured or killed myself, because it was so dangerous at that time.
You're still involved in a certain way in rallying. Your Young Rallying Driver of the Year award keeps you in touch, I suppose, with rallying and with people involved in the sport.
That scholarship undoubtedly is a help to young drivers, but really when you see the stupendous amount of money that's required nowadays, I just wonder really where the sport is going or where it has come to, that it's so difficult to make it now because of the money. And the result is that a lot of the better cars now, you'll see, especially in Ireland, they're in the hands of much older drivers. And you very rarely see a young driver in a top car, which is really the inverse of the situation in my day. But I think that's a great pity. And while the money that comes from the Coleman Scholarship is useful, I think it only goes really a limited way. My lads have been blessed with having a very good sponsor, Gerard Kelly, who's been a great friend of ours. But, you know, you need a lot more people like that. Okay, sponsorship can be a corporate thing, but I often think myself, when you see the amount of money that some people have in Ireland nowadays, I just thought that maybe they would consider to the young sports people, whether they're rally drivers, race drivers, or whatever they are.
You've been inducted into the Irish Motorsport Ireland Hall of Fame 2003. I know it was at that dinner. You were very surprised that day.
Yeah, I was there to give out the Coleman scholarship, and I was just swallowing a sup of tea at the end of it, and lo and behold, my name was called out, and I nearly fell off the chair. But it was a nice honour to get, there's no doubt, and you know, it's something that I cherish.
Well, it's been an amazing career, you know, starting back in the 60s. It's a pleasure talking to you, Billy, and thank you for inviting us into your home. Billy Coleman, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, John. Thank you.
Next week on Ireland's Motorsport Legends, Jeremy McWilliams.
I have no idea why I got into motorsport or how, but it was something that kids in my class, two or three of them, were lucky enough to have motocrossers, and they went racing at the weekend. Of course, they talk about it quite often. I was pretty envious of that. So for a bit of crack, we used to go, when I was 17, we used to go up to the local circuit in County Antrim and get in there on a Sunday and race around it. And I think I just found out by accident that I could ride a bike all right.